laying on the floor. And all these kids were climbing on him and jumping on him and doing this and that with him. And he was just in there kind of like another kid, just playing with them all in a great fun way. And I said to him, I was admiring his ability just to join in with the kids and just play so freely. And he told me, oh, one of the lessons I got from my improv teacher is that at improv, the basic principle of improv, you say yes to whatever comes your way. And you don't say no, you say yes, and then you play with it, you work with it, you know, you have to work with it, but you don't ever say no. So here were these kids, they came to him and he worked with it, he said yes to it in some way. So another thing I thought was very interesting I learned is sometimes when the kids are really out of control, really noisy, and if a teacher wants to get the kids' attention, what the teacher can do is stand in the middle of the room and whisper, "Children, I'm going to tell you a story." You know, so whisper something really, so they almost couldn't hear it, and then they get really quiet to hear what was this important thing being said, what was being whispered, and all the kids would quiet down. So I was thinking about that, about meditation practices, you know, this settling process in meditation. One way, of course, in meditation is you have to, you know, say yes to everything in a certain way. Everything's a teachable moment. Everything, you find a teaching there. You find how to work with whatever's going on. But you could, you know, when all the different fragmented parts of our being are going off in different directions and being very loud and noisy, you could go around to each kindergarten kid and say, "Psh, be quiet, sit quiet. I'm going to tell a story in a little while. Please be quiet, sit there." And the kid gets the teacher's attention. The kid would quiet down, but you have, you know, 12 kids in the class. So you go around to each one of them and tell them to be quiet. By the time you get to the 12th one, the first one started up again, right? It doesn't work, you know. And sometimes it works that way. And certain kids need certain attention, certain kind of attention. Sometimes they need very kind, loving attention, and sometimes they need. They need a strong no. So you can't do that, and very firm approach, very clear. So sometimes in the mind is the same thing. Sometimes things in our mind need a lot of kindness and acceptance and generosity of spirit with what's going on, and that helps it to settle. And sometimes what we need is a very strong, disciplined approach and say, no, I'm not going to think that anymore. I'm not going to follow that train of thought or that activity, or, you know, just very clear and kind of like a warrior approach. No, it's enough. It comes from coming from a place of strength inside of us. And in some ways, Vipassana practice is the approach of meeting whatever arises and attending to it, taking care of it. But sometimes it can be like a room of kindergarten kids, where if you go around to take care of one, it's settled, and then you take care of the others, you know, the first one starts up again. So that's why we also have concentration practice, in addition to the Vipassana practice. And the concentration practice is a little bit more like standing in the middle of the room and whispering and getting everybody's attention. Everything else settles around that whisper. We have this place of stability. The teacher has to be stable, calm, relaxed, strong. It is a teacher. It is a grown-up, after all. It stands there and takes that grown-up position. And then the kids kind of align themselves around that reference point of calm, strong stability, and then they quiet down around it. And sometimes all the different fragmented aspects of our psyche, rather than dealing with them each individually, sometimes a useful approach is to somehow get them all to settle together. And concentration practice is one of those ways to do that. And there are variety of ways of developing concentration. One certainly is to be very resolved and determined, which is very, I think being resolved is a great quality of meditation practice. This is what I'm doing, I'm here to do it, and the kind of strength of resolve is really important. But there's also a sense also at the same time, maybe at the same time, of being very patient and very almost quiet. Not, 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 you know, don't take a hammer to the ceramic pot. You know, if you want to clean it, you don't take a hammer and hit it over it. You know, you kind of bring a nice little, you know, soft cotton towel or something to clean it. So the same thing, you can be quite resolved, but you have to have the right tool. And sometimes people, in being resolved, sometimes have this sledgehammer approach to their inner life. I'm going to be concentrated no matter what. And that can kind of destroy something. And I think of somehow the inner life as being something quite shy. And sometimes you want to have this kind of more quiet whisper approach that gives things a chance to kind of fall into line, to fall together, to gather together. So, you know, concentrating on something like the breath, it can be other things. Part of the function there is to create the right conditions, a little whisper in the mind, a little whisper of attention, or the right conditions of resolve, stability, of adult-like presence, a calm presence in this noisy room. That can start being the focus of everything else, so everything else can relax and settle down. So our concerns about planning what's going to happen tomorrow, our anxieties about other things elsewhere, or our resentments about the past, or, you know, our fantasies, or, you know, our judgments about ourselves, or judgments about others, or all the different things that come up and make it difficult for us to stay present. All those things. To quiet down, relax, because we're primarily staying with the focus of concentration. We're kind of staying there, being attached there, being connected there, and then allowing everything else kind of settle around it. And the goal of concentration practice, there's a variety of goals, but one of the goals that I like to emphasize is that part of the goal of concentration practice is to become composed, is to learn how to be composed on oneself. And I like the word composed a lot. Because it's, to me, composed is something you do physically, something you do with your whole being. If you tell someone, compose yourself, probably they'll take a deep breath and kind of adjust their posture a little bit, and it's both physical and something internal. And so the idea of concentration is something that's very physical. It includes all of who we are. We're composing it, we're relaxing it in a way that it becomes grounded, settled, balanced, centered, on itself. And if you develop concentration only as a mental phenomena, as a laser point of the mind, I think it's very fragile and maybe even not so useful. If you don't first have that stability, that broad physical embodiment of being composed in the body. So part of this process of settling the kindergarten class is to settle the body. And to begin to relax the body. So being with the breath, focusing on the breath, I think it's very important initially not to be kind of narrow on the breath, but rather to be in the breath in such a way there's some spaciousness, some openness, some broader awareness that takes in the rest of the body, so that as you stay with the breath, there's some, that open awareness allows some kind of settling to happen in your body. So your stomach can be relaxed, your chest, shoulders, the face, the back shoulder blades, the back rib cage, the whole kind of thing, the whole physical kind of settling that happens. The more composed we are physically, the more composed we'll be mentally, because the ways in which we lose our composure physically is probably directly correlated to how we've lost our composure mentally. The mental and physical are so closely connected. And so to stay on something like the breath as a way of not dealing with all the issues in your life, not dealing with everything that as it comes up, but actually in some ways not ignoring it. The kindergarten teacher doesn't ignore the classroom when she stands in the middle and whispers, but she's allowing the conditions for everything else to settle down around her. So you're not ignoring all these different aspects of who we are, but that by concentrating, we're kind of having this open possibility to let everything else relax and settle down. So the things we're preoccupied about, the things we're afraid about, the things that we're, the places we go in our mind, our thoughts and our feelings and our emotions, that there's some understanding that what we're doing is we're allowing all those things to settle down, to relax, to unwind, to unknot. And I think it's very important to understand that, because the psyche, the mind, can have a very strong belief that it's going to fix our life, solve our life by thinking about things. It's going to fix our life by somehow engaging into all the little problems, all the little details of our life, and somehow doing something with it, manipulating, changing it for the better, fixing it. Now, sometimes we have to do that. That's vipassana practice, kind of meeting the situations directly and finding a teachable moment in that. But there's a lot of wisdom sometimes in not being direct with some of the difficulties of our life, or but rather basically just kind of like not ignoring them either, but kind of staying very simple, very relaxed, being focused, composing oneself, realizing you don't have to engage in all these things, and disengaging it, allowing them to settle and relax. You probably all know the saying, I think it was Mark Twain who said, I've had a lot of problems in my life, most of which never happened. And it's remarkable, you know, when we start letting things kind of settle down, how many things maybe are have an imaginary quality to our difficulties. And so if you can just settle, I mean, you can settle and relax, settle and settle and settle, relax really deeply, then I think what really needs our attention becomes clearer and clearer. We kind of separate out from the imaginary, separate out the imaginary from the real. So composing oneself on the breathing might be an interesting way of practicing, instead of concentrating on the breath, composing oneself on the breath, so that it's all aspects of who we are. It's the physical aspects of who we are, it's the emotional aspects of who we are, it's the cognitive aspects of who we are, it's the intentional aspects of who we are, perceptual aspects of who we are, you know, the whole, everything who we are, it all kind of gets composed, settles itself around the experience of breathing. And because one of the ideas of concentration practice is that it's meant to lead to kind of a unification of the mind and the body. It's a unifying practice. It's a composing practice of all the unifying or composing all those places inside of us which are fragmented. So you might try, you know, during lunch now, when you sit down to eat your lunch, spend a little bit of time composing yourself before you start eating, and then eat from that composed place and see what that's like, and how that differs maybe from the usual ways in which you might eat.